today teaching lions, tigers, and seals. Most high school graduates go on to study at 2 or 4 year colleges, though many aren't sure what they want to do. But Moore Park Community College in Southern California specializes. It's considered the best school in the country for exotic animal trainers and the only school to offer a degree in exotic animal training and management. And it's very selective, accepts only 50 students or so per class. Journalist Amy Sutherland spent a year at Moore Park following a group of students. Her new book is called Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers. We'll talk with her in just a moment about the school and what she says she learned about people from working with animals. But we also want to hear from you. If you have questions about how animal trainers are trained, where they work, and why nobody uses the word trick anymore, call us, 800-989-8255, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Amy Sutherland is with us from member station WBUR in Boston. Must be crowded there today. Nice of you to come in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do students at Moore Park, you hear animal trainer, you assume they go to work at the circus or at SeaWorld or in zoos?
Well, it's even broader than that. I mean, we have trainers working in sanctuaries. We have trainers working with seeing eye dogs. We have trainers at aquariums. The list is just getting longer as time goes on.
Because it turns out animal trainers are learning not just to have tigers jump up on barrels, but they're teaching animals very practical things.
Right. Yeah. People have a very narrow idea of what animal training is, that it's a way to either teach animal tricks or to teach it to do exactly what you want. But training today is really used in a wide way to just make a quality of an animal's life better, from teaching them how to voluntarily go along with a medical procedure such as a blood draw to training an animal to go into a crate so they can be transported. I mean, it's got a broad application.
One of the students you describe in your book was teaching a primate, and I forget which exact kind, but to present his arm for an injection for blood tests.
Right. That was a mandrill named Zulu, who's a huge character. But yeah, and that is that's extremely important with primates because they often become diabetic in captivity, and in the past, those primates had to be euthanized, but now trainers have learned how to train them to present their arm so that they can just, get a sugar test or blood draw daily if need be.
Mm-hmm. And the school that these kids, and most of them are kids, some of them 45 years old, but most of these kids go to, this is the way you describe it, is a boot camp for animal trainers.
Yeah. It's a 2-year associate's program, but to me, it was like the most intense graduate program I ever saw. And they not only have a heavy course load, but they are essentially zookeepers while they're carrying this big academic course load. And then juggling in between that is they're learning how to work with, animals, dangerous and not so dangerous, but still. And they pretty much have to give themselves over to this program for, the course of almost 2 years.
Well, joining us now is a Moore Park Community College graduate named Linda Castaneda, as she works now as an animal keeper at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago and joins us now from her home in Chicago. Very good of you to take time to be with us today.
No problem. How are you guys?
We're good, I hope. I know I'm good. Anyway, let me ask you, after that boot camp that we've just being described, is working actually at a zoo harder or easier than it was at school?
I think it's a little bit easier because you don't have the academic course load, but being a zookeeper is a lot of physical activity. It's pretty strenuous work, and especially in a very busy building. I work in the Regenstein African Journey building, and we have a good collection, and we're very, very busy people. So it still is quite strenuous, but you don't have all the academics that go along with it. So it eases up a little bit. And, when you go home, you're not studying at home either.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were a school teacher before you went to Moore Park. Why did you decide to change professions?
I don't like being inside very much, actually. I really love animals, and I really think that I wanted to do something that helped animals in a way, and I'd applied for the San Diego Zoo to work for San Diego Zoo even before I was a teacher many a times. I'd never gotten in, and one day during one of my breaks from being a teacher during one of the off periods, I was looking up the San Diego Zoo website, and I'm like, what does it take? What does it take? Just tell me what I need to do, and they list Moore Park College as one of their recommendations to getting into the zookeeping world, and so that's what I decided to do.
Getting into Moore Park isn't all that easy either.
No, it's not. I didn't get in my first try.
No, so you had to wait.
I had to wait, and it was really heartbreaking, especially because the process is now a lottery, and so it was just bad luck, and it didn't seem very fair to me, and I wanted it so badly, and I felt like I was really qualified for it and would be very dedicated to it, and heartbroken to have to be like, well, maybe next year. And there's people that have applied over and over and over again and that still apply and still hope every year, you know, to get in this time.
Well, I wonder now in the zookeeper community, when you guys go out for a drink after dinner or whatever, do the Moore Park graduates kind of swagger around a little bit?
I think we're warned against that. That's that Edom curse that Amy was talking about. You know, we're warned against feeling like, oh, well, we've got formal educational training, because it really, in the zookeeping world, is more about your experience than it is about your formal educational training. These days, they look for education, and it's always best to have a science background, but really it's more about experience and, you know, what, and also personality.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be hardworking and dedicated and be very flexible in order to work in the zookeeping field. So I think there's a certain camaraderie because we kind of know that experience. You know, we've been through the boot camp, but we by no means try to feel superior to others, because everyone, when you start at a zoo, everyone's on the same level, and you're there to work for the animals.
Hmm. Edom, I should explain, is the Exotic Animal Training and Management. That's what they call the course at Moore Park. And Amy, let me bring you in and say, what's the Edom curse?
Well, the Edom curse is that over the years, the students have gotten a little bit of a reputation of, when they graduate, of going off and sort of telling their bosses how things should be done and how they were done at Edom, because Edom holds a really high standard at its own teaching compound and has a specific way of doing things. And not everybody, not all zoos and, you know, aquariums do things the same way.
Mm.
So, they always tell them to swallow their pride a little bit before they go out into the work world, because they don't know everything just yet.
And I suspect, Linda Castaneda, are you still learning things every day?
Definitely. I work in an amazing house. There's great keepers at work at the Lincoln Park Zoo, and there's so much experience just even in the house that I work in that, you know, I'm always asking questions, and I'm always like, I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, why did you do this, or how do I know this, or how can I find out that? Because you're going to work with a variety of different species, and there's people that have been working with even particular individuals for 10 years, and you can't go in there and be like, well, I'm an Edom graduate, so I know all about the black rhino, but there's people that have been with these animals for their entire life at the zoo, and so you really need to ask questions if you want to be a good keeper.
And let me ask you finally, I understand that this is not the most lucrative profession on the planet. Then again, neither is school teaching, but if you're going into it for money, I suspect you're probably going in for the wrong motive.
You are going in for the wrong motive, and although you would think that it wouldn't be very competitive, it is extremely competitive, and you would think, well, people are standing in line to pick up poo, and they really are. It is a very difficult field to get into.
So even after you graduate, most of your job is picking up poo?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's the majority of my day.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're picking up rhino poo or hippo poo or
right.
aardvark poo, and you don't really get to do that in the office. So.
No, not on a regular basis. You really wouldn't want to.
Right.
Neil, could I add something to that?
Please go ahead, Amy.
I just wanted to say that, you know, one of the things about this profession that people don't think about is that it does take it takes nerve, because zookeepers and trainers put themselves in the way of dangerous animals, and they have to really have a lot of courage to do what they do. And what's interesting about that is this is a profession that is dominated by women. And as far as I could tell, it's the only dangerous profession that is dominated by women, which is a really interesting twist to it.
Well, Linda Castaneda, we're going to let you get back to, whatever it is you have scheduled for this afternoon. And if it's more poo picking up, just we'll leave it to our imaginations, okay?
Great. Thank you.
Linda Castaneda, an animal keeper at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago, and also a Moore Park Community College graduate, where she learned how to train animals. Still with us is Amy Sutherland, the journalist and author of Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And well, let's talk to Lucy. Lucy calling us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I have a Doberman puppy that I acquired last year, and it has been an adventure in training.
Hmm.
And I at first hesitated taking on the challenge of training a Doberman, but I decided I was ready in my life to do this, and it was an adventure in learning leadership. And in learning all about the dog, I ended up learning a lot about myself and about how to interact with other people, other animals, of course, but other people.
Huh. And what was the best lesson you think you learned?
Well, I learned how to really pay attention to body language in people and, of course, other animals. And I feel much more confident in myself in reading people and in reading other dogs, of course. And the dog has given me so much positive feedback in succeeding. He has his canine good citizen, and we're going to go on to do therapy work with him. He's a big boy, he's a big Doberman, and so he looks very aggressive. And then once people get a look at, get a look at his temperament and how wonderful he is, they soften to him. And so it's taught me too not to judge people on the surface, because sometimes people that look big and aggressive really aren't. And to read their body language, to listen to what they're saying, pay attention, pay very close attention to what the animal's saying and what people are doing and saying, too.
All right. Lucy, thanks very much, and continued good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're talking about animal training today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Amy Sutherland, just to follow up on that phone call, one of the things that your students exult about as they develop their skills, obviously in a much more systematic way than training one dog at home, but is their ability to suddenly be able to communicate with a member of another species.
Right. I mean, that caller made some really excellent points, because it is, when you train an animal, you're learning so many different things and so many new skills and things that you don't learn with other humans, such as reading body language. And when you're able, it's like really learning to speak another language, yet you're doing it with another species. And you can never underestimate the power of that and the effect that can have on a person. And the students at the school, came out different people as a result of that. And I found even myself in the year I spent watching them learn how to train that it had a profound change on my own self.
In what way?
Well, some of the same things that she was saying. I mean, to me, the world sort of opened up, because once you sort of understand behavior and why animals act the way they do, and then you start thinking about the fact that, we're animals too, and a lot of those rules actually apply to us. I don't know, the world started to make more sense to me in a way, and just sort of looking more at the world through an animal's eye.
I was fascinated by the chapter in which you go a bit into the scientific background of this, about, of course, the famous Russian scientist Pavlov, and we misinterpret his understandings every day, and B.F. Skinner, who really refined a lot of what Pavlov had discovered in the first place. But the idea the idea of rewarding animals can change their behavior, that this has a scientific basis, and it goes a little bit beyond that, too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, my book is really about human behavior as much as it is animal behavior. And one of the sort of interesting things that they have to try to learn is that, there's all this science that shows that rewards work so much more effectively and efficiently than punishment in teaching. But there's something about our human primate culture that we are just really wed to punishment and negative and do something because I say so. And these students have to overcome that in themselves and learn a whole new way of thinking and approaching, problems and animals. And, it's such a challenging program mentally in that respect, beyond just the academics.
I was interested in the story you tell of one of the students who's trying to train, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, cavy, C-A-V-Y?
Oh, a cavy.
Cavy, excuse me, which is a very skittish creature, very afraid of primates, and has to learn, this student, how to approach this animal with an almost monk-like devotion and intensity.
Well, you know, one of the great things about that example is that it showed how differently training can be used and how many different capacities, because it didn't look like training maybe to the average person, but by all this student was trying to do was get near this cavy and to be able to go into its cage without the cavy completely freaking out. And so that might not look like training, but in fact it is. And she had to spend months just slowly getting the cavy used to her presence. And this was a very dynamic person who has trouble holding still typically. So she really had to basically change herself to be able to train this behavior with the cavy.
And one final question. We're almost out of time with you, but you mentioned earlier that this helps the animals' lives, teaching them how to present their arms to be injected.
Right. Dramatically. Well, I mean, it makes it so that medical procedures don't have to be so stressful because the animals have been trained to go through them. There's all kinds of practical things that you can train animals to improve their life. If you train an animal to walk on leash, which they do that with a number of the animals at the teaching zoo at this school. They train the baboon to walk on a leash and the camels, and they even walk the emu. But if you can walk an animal, you can get it out of its cage and give it a lot more exercise and stimulation. And the list kind of just goes on like that.
Well, Amy Sutherland, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Amy Sutherland, a journalist and the author of Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers. You can read how animal trainers learn how to handle alligators, monkeys, and emus at our website. The first chapter of Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched is online at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.